A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35. This is a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. And I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we're not experts, you know?
Oh, we are not. We're two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And, you know, you can visit our website, Forever 35 Podcast, for links to everything we mentioned on the show, our Instagram, Forever 35 Podcast. There is a Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. You can find our favorite products at shopmy.us/forever35. You can also sign up for the Forever 35 newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. And if you would like to reach us, we have a voicemail and a text message number at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
We should also mention that we are doing a live show on Wednesday, forever.
That's the best error you've ever made. Wednesday, forever 35.
We should also mention that we are doing a live show on Wednesday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can get your tickets at moment.co/forever35. There's going to be games. There's going to be chit chat. There's going to be a Q&A. It's going to be a party.
Should I free mug, Dori? Should I free mug?
I mean, listen, Kate, you do you. I will not be free mugging near my computer. Are you insane? But, you know, you do you.
Okay. Tickets, I will do me.
Please. Tickets are $10. And if you can't make the actual time, if you have a ticket, you can watch the show for a week after it airs on demand. And also, we're going to be ending the night with some final thoughts and intentions at a little after party, a little cozy after party in the hotel lounge. And, you know, I think that's when things might get really real, if you know what I'm saying.
I can't wait to see you get real. Because you know I'm down too.
As opposed to how fake I've been until now.
I actually find you to be very real, like all the time. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah. You're
really nice.
You are very authentic to who you are, person, and I really like that about you.
Wow, that is such a compliment. Thank you. I mean, I think you are too. Duh.
Oh, that's nice of you. I've had to kind of work on that for me though. Maybe we all do.
We all do.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be a blast.
Well, Kate.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Well, I mean, there's a lot happening with me, and I honestly don't know where to begin. I have so many things to share with you.
Okay.
I mean, they're not like life-changing things, but kind of self-care-y things that have kind of been happening over here in Kate's corner.
Okay.
I will say, like,
the world.
Kate's corner of the world, very small corner. It's where only I am. You know what? You know what is interesting? I did a vision board. I made a vision board. Okay. If you're not familiar with vision boards, it's essentially a practice of, you can do it. There's no right or wrong way to do it. I like to do it with imagery and words. So I do your kind of standard, like cutting pictures out of a magazine and pasting them onto a board. But there are so many different ways, to kind of create vision boards. If you're curious, Google and find what resonates with you, because again, no right or wrong way. But I sat and I did this. I did it for two nights, two Fridays in a row with a friend. And what ended up happening, which I just thought was interesting, is that when I started, I kind of cut out a lot of things that were like very career related, things I thought I wanted. Like I printed out like the New York Times bestseller list, and then I was going to cut that out and put it on my vision board for as an author. And then when I got down to actually pasting and creating this vision board, what ended up happening was that the things I was drawn to, the images and ideas I was drawn to, were all about relaxing. And
interesting.
It has really got me thinking a little bit about stuff. This is kind of aligns with the fact that I had a phone call with my doctor just about, you know, my body and blood work and stuff I've been dealing with, and, you know, kind of really trying to, I think, heal from being really burnt out and run down, and having that kind of come out in like the fact that I had like no like iron stores, basically. Like my body is like pretty run down at this point. And yeah, I'll send you a photo of my vision board, Dory, but it's pictures of people paddleboarding, pictures of the ocean, sunset, like really kind of just, it's a lot of nature, people hiking. And the words I put on it are bright, wonder, sleep, becoming more of yourself, take a break. I have a picture of a person meditating, a person of a picture walking on the beach. And also, come home to comfort was a quote I put on there. I did not put New York Times bestseller on my vision board. In fact, it stressed me out thinking about that. And I just kind of hit me that I have been really going hard. And I think I've been in this kind of place where I am really ready to rest. Not work and not create, not write, not promote my books and make this podcast, but prioritizing rest and relaxation and things that make me feel, per my word of the year, things that are gentle on me and calm. So I don't know. This is just kind of, you know, I stopped, like, for example, the way I've been exercising has completely changed. I'm not doing any like high intensity workouts or like huge heavy lifts. And a lot of the way I'm moving my body is like pickleball with friends and my horseback riding lesson and going for long walks. And I just kind of have, I don't know what has shifted, or I do know what has shifted. I think a lot of it is like really checking in with my health and how I'm feeling, but yeah, I don't know. I keep staring at this vision board and I'm like, oh, okay. My truest, seems like my more honest desires came out.
Wow. This is big, Kate.
I don't know. Is it? I mean, I don't have any plans to go paddleboarding or backpacking or to a beach, but maybe it's just that the like energy of that is what is resonating with me.
I feel like you've talked before about wanting to get like be more in nature.
Yeah. And I am, I mean, even just going for walks every day with my dogs or without my dogs and not listening to anything, not making a phone call, just like feeling the sunshine, smelling the air, looking at the trees, I find really grounding. And I would like to, I do aspire to hike more and to even go backpacking and camping this year, a little bit more than I have before. But it's just, I think it's more like, I think I really need to honor the fact that I need a little bit of a rest. And like, what does that realistically look like as a human being who also has to like, you know, earn a living and take care of their family and, you know, make sure the dogs take their heartworm medicine.
Yeah.
I do delegate things. Anyway, I don't know. Just thinking. Anyway, listen, if anyone vision boarded this year, I'd be very curious as to like how it came out. And now I also want to say, I'd be pretty psyched if any of my books ever became New York Times bestsellers. It's not like I don't want that. Like those are all things like, yes, please. I want to like write books forever and have billions of people read them. But, you know, I think I also just want to like sleep this year a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? Because we live in a capitalistic society. So,
well, and also like,
they're not always prioritized.
No, I mean, they are most certainly not. And we can get into the many ways in which they are not at all prioritized or valued. Like, or if someone chooses to pursue a more balanced or calm life, oftentimes that is not seen as worthy, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, look, I've been hanging out a lot in the anti-work subreddit, and I feel like there's a lot that people could learn from that subreddit.
There is an anti-work subreddit?
Yep.
What happens in there? What do people just talk about, not like how to work less? I like this.
People talk about quitting jobs that are shitty, mm-hmm. Like where they're taken advantage of, underpaid, etc. I think ultimately the idea is that people want to be treated with respect at work and, you know, be compensated fairly, but also have work-life balance, which I think is part of what you are really talking about. You're not saying you only want to rest, like you never want to work.
No, it's love the work that I get to do. I love my job.
It's that you want to also prioritize this other aspect that is going to, you know, have a positive impact on your mental and physical health.
Well, and it will allow me to actually do quality work. Like, this is the kind of, yeah. I'm so grateful that I am my own boss. But also, when you are your own boss, like, the first thing that goes for me out of my day is anything that would be considered like relaxing. Like, oh, I can't do this 20-minute yoga class today. I've got to work. Like, I remove everything out in order to focus on quote unquote work. And so truly, I think this is really a message to myself about how I manage my own needs and my own time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would just like caution you against framing it as like resting is in the service of doing better work.
Because I think and just that's like resting,
a slippery slope.
Yes. Is in the service of doing a better me.
Yeah. Resting is in the service of resting.
I like that, Dory. Thank you. That's a really good reminder. Thank you. Now,
you're welcome.
I want to switch gears a little bit because you ordered something and you've been holding on to it and waiting to tell us about it.
It's interesting. We're sort of talking about two sides of the same coin, I think, because I think so. Have been feeling like I wanted some structure in terms of goal setting, a lot of which are professional goals, but also some non-professional goals, and feeling like I needed more of a roadmap to help me like reach those goals. So yeah. I was really looking for a goal setting planner, and I looked around online a bunch, and this all sort of came out when I started doing that, that thing on Notion, the app where I saw someone on TikTok who had a 12-week plan. And I was like, oh, I like that. I like the 12-week plan. And someone that we had interviewed, I think it was Whitney Cummings, talked about having like doing things in sort of like 3-month blocks. I was like, I like that. So I was looking around for kind of like a 3-month goal planner. And I saw a comment on a Wirecutter article where someone was like, I love the full focus planner. So I was like, okay, let me check this out. And I was like, okay, this looks like it has a lot of aspects to it that I think will be helpful. Like, it is 3 months, but you know, it does have you set annual goals. It really encourages you to like break down each goal, like how you're going to do it. Also, like, what is motivating you? What's motivating you to even like want this goal? How are you going to celebrate yourself when you reach the goal? Which I think is like an important aspect of like reaching a goal is like you should celebrate yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and giving in it, you know, gives you a lot of ways to kind of like track your progress. And then there's also daily pages where you just like list out your 3 most important tasks of the day. There's a weekly preview. Like, there's just a lot. There's a lot happening. So the planner arrived yesterday and I have started filling it out. I feel like the jury is still out. Like, I've obviously only had it for one day, so I can't really evaluate. My one thing that so far is not like sitting completely well with me is I don't like the planner's vibe.
Like the planner, like the...
I don't like the planner's energy.
I you know what's so funny? You sent me a picture of the planner and I feel like it had a really cliched quote on the page and I was like, oh my God, where? Let me see if I can find it.
And it was,
and that came, like that kind of strikes me.
It came wrapped in a, there was like a, what do you call those things? It's like a strip of paper wrapped around the strip of,
like, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Wrapped around the, the planner. And there's a quote from the founder of the company. It's like not even a great quote. And then there was also a little thing like encouraging you to like buy their course. That's so what I'm gathering from this full focus planner is that the planners are meant as like a way in for you to then purchase a million other things, courses, coaching, listen to their podcasts. Like it's like a whole industry. And I think that I don't love. It honestly feels a little culty. The guy who founded the company has his own quotes in here in addition to like Michelle Obama. And like, you know, so that just feels a little corny. Everything is like trademarked. It just feels
fascinating.
It's like not my vibe. So I'm going to do it. It's also expensive. You know, it's only a 3-month planner and it was like $40. So if you're doing this 4 times a year, you're spending $160 on these planners every year, which is a lot. But I'm going to do it. And then I'm like considering possibly like designing my own planner, my own goal planner that has a better vibe, that has better energy.
And would you sell it or would it be just for you?
I don't know. I would, maybe I would sell it as a download or something. I don't want to get into like the planner production business because I don't need to get into that, but I don't know. I just like, and there was nothing out there in the marketplace that was like exactly really what I was looking for. This really came the closest and it's just not, it's not me.
Yeah, you know, it's like when you go on a first date with someone and they're nice and you like them, but you don't have that like oomph.
No. If it honestly feels very masculine. Mm. It has a lot of like startup bro masculine energy tinged with, I have to say, I'm getting an evangelical Christian vibe also.
Okay.
It's very weird. Very weird vibe from this planner. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it will help me like reach my goals. So we'll see. Kind of the opposite vibe of what you described with the vision board. I think I need to find like the happy medium.
Yeah. Well, you need to find what works best for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so I just,
it's okay
to update everyone.
I'm excited for you to at least try it out. And perhaps through using it, you'll find, you'll kind of continue to discover what you really need in order to kind of create these goal setting plans.
Totally. That's what I'm hoping. So, yeah. So that's my update. Kate, should we introduce our guest?
Take it away.
Okay. We got to interview this week Christy Tate, who is a fascinating human being. In addition to being a Chicago-based writer and essayist whose work has been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, McSweeney's, it just goes on and on and on. She's also the author of the New York Times bestseller Group, which was a Reese's Book Club selection. And her new book is called BFF, A Memoir of Friendship Lost and Found, and it comes out on Tuesday. So if you like what you hear, which I mean, I think you will, put in a little pre-order for Christy's book or order by the time you listen to it and go down to your local bookshop, however you choose to purchase your books and check it out. She had some really profound things to say about friendship and relationships and family history, family trauma. And yeah, I really got a lot out of our conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to share it with everyone. So let's take a little break and we'll come back with Christy.
All right.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Hi, Christy. Welcome to Forever 35. We're very glad you're here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're very excited to talk to you and all about your new book, but we like to ask every guest at the top of every interview to please share, if you can think of one, a self-care practice that is meaningful in your regular life. Daily, doesn't need to be daily life, but just in your day-to-day.
Yeah, I would say that the number one thing that I do for myself is exercise, and I cringe a little when I talk about it because I don't mean it like get in shape, have a firm abs. I mean, get my endorphins up so that I can have that boost. I just need the boost. I really need the boost. I'm a morose person. I live in Chicago. It's gray a lot. And I need that to just sort of stay on the right side of morbidity, all kinds of morbidity.
I find that very relatable. And I'm curious, what is there a particular kind of exercise that you enjoy?
Yes. And my family makes so much fun of me. So I'm going to tell you, and you can be on my side, not theirs. So I almost always ride a stationary bike, and I don't like anyone yelling at me or music. I find that assaultive, and it makes me feel like it's the 80s and that someone's yelling at me to like burn the fat. So what I do is I turn all that down, and I I read a book. while I'm working. Now, I still sweat. Would I get a better workout if I didn't read a book, like perched on the handlebars, and my wrists would not have carpal tunnel probably? But there's two things that I know I need. I need to read and I need to exercise. And there's only so many hours in the day. So about 3 years ago, I put them together and that's what I do. And it's working for me, although it does not look very hardcore. It is hardcore.
Well, it's mentally and physically hard. It is hardcore to read and move your body at the same time. Yes. Like I could barely watch a full TV show and pay attention while I'm also remembering like my legs are moving. The fact that you're doing you're digesting written material while physically moving is a feat.
Yes. Yeah. I can't do thrillers on the bike because I'll fall off. But more literary fiction and memoirs, I found it very compatible, and it's my 45 minutes and I fight for it every day because the benefits are just too great to ignore.
And you're not doing an audiobook. Let's be clear. You are holding an actual book.
Yes. Yeah. Like I've done a few like really big ones, like the Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois. It's like a 500 page book. That's a little tricky. A paperback skinnier book is better, but I'll kind of do whatever. Mm.
So can I just ask about your stationary bike? Because we are in this world, especially, you know, post-COVID, we're in this world of like, we've been through this pandemic, we're still in this pandemic, but a lot of us started exercising at home. Did you get like a snazzy, fancy Peloton-y exercise bike, or are you on a, like, it's 1992 and I'm on a traditional stationary bike?
Yes. So we got a Peloton because my husband, I used to be a gym goer before the Peloton, right? I mean, before the pandemic. And as soon as the pandemic hit, my husband's like, what are you going to do for exercise? And I was like, I don't know. We were all very scared. So
yeah,
we ordered a Peloton. And what's funny now is like, I did classes for like 3 weeks. And then I just felt like, why are they yelling at me? Like, I know that's their job and people respond to that. But like, it was such a traumatic time for everyone, of course. The yelling wasn't working for me. And so that's like early, like we got it on March 17th of 2020.
Oh my goodness.
So that was like pretty prescient to see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. and then very early, by April, I was already like reading on the bike and so it's so silly. We bought the fancy bike for the classes and I don't do the classes. So joke is on me, I think, but
no, I think it's speaks to the fact that is not for everybody. And in many ways, that's just like fitness has been streamlined into that in so many ways. And that isn't how all of us respond. Like that's not, doesn't always connect for all of us in terms of how we want to move our bodies or be spoken to like what motivates us. I think you make a good point. I also like, I've been walking a lot lately and trying to take in my surroundings and like figure out things that I get from the walk other than just the like quote fitness aspect of it. And I think you, by reading on the bike, you kind of turn it into this interesting practice of it being about a lot more than what exercise has become in kind of our westernized culture.
Exactly. Like I spent a lot of years battling my body. Like I need my body. I need to be on the same side as my body. I need my mind to be there too. And so I have to kind of feed it all at once, or I can too quickly turn it into self-abuse. And I gotta have the book to distract me from going too hard. And the bike distracts me from being too dissociated while I read. It's a very delicate Jenga situation.
I love that. I think you've like Matt really figured out what works for you, which is so hard with all the kind of influences of the world around us. It's often hard to figure out what actually is vital for ourselves. I'm curious, is that a skill you've recently acquired? Is that something you've worked on?
Oh, for sure. I'm certainly a work in progress. And I found, maybe you have this too, like I'll be 50 in June and a lot of my friends are turning 50 or have already met that milestone, which is arbitrary, of course, but and maybe it's the pandemic too, but just talking about like, what is real self-care? What do we really want? Like some of my friends are ballers and they're real estate agents and hitting their highs, and they're enjoying it in the time of their lives. And some people just want to have a quieter life. And it's interesting to have these conversations with friends. Most of my friends are women, and they're the ones I'm talking about this with. It's like, instead of thinking, well, am I supposed to be like grabbing the world by the horns, or can I just go on a walk and make myself vegetables from my garden? Like, can it be enough to figure out what my own heart desire is, which takes many years in my experience, and then to execute it, and then to not apologize for it, and to just live into it? Those things are really hard. And I'm grateful for all the women in my life who are having these conversations with me, because everyone has to find it for themselves. So I'm feeling support in the journey, and it may change. Like, I may want to be loud this year, and next year I may want to go real quiet. And there's no rules. I think my friends are like my scaffolding for whatever path I choose at any point in time.
You know, you met Meredith, the subject of your book, at a 12-step meeting, and your previous book, which I have to admit I have not read, so I apologize for that, but your previous book was about group therapy. And I'm wondering kind of what you think it is about these types of meetings that really like facilitate friendship, or maybe they don't, and this was unusual.
I think that they do. I think my experience in both group therapy and 12-step meetings, which are similar in many respects, in my experience, it's all about a call, an invitation to be vulnerable and to tell your story. And in those situations, many things are stripped away, like especially in a 12-step program where the guideline is to leave your occupation, your status at the door. And when we come to these chairs, we're all just, you know, sufferers seeking a solution for whatever ails us, right? I'm in several programs, so I always have to remember where am I today? and so I find just the atmosphere, other people, like vulnerability begets vulnerability. And for me, in spaces where I can be most vulnerable and other people are as well, that's when I'm the most ripe to make a connection. So it makes sense to me that I would have made very strong connections in these two places where I've sort of been stripped away, not only of status, but often of my own bullshit, all the things that, like, all the narratives in my head that tell me I can't, I'm not good enough, I'd rather be alone. Those are all lies I tell to myself, and they just aren't as loud in those rooms.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I have thought a lot about is, you know, the narratives of our own lives that we tell ourselves. And I felt like that was a lot of what your book was about as well, especially when it came to your childhood. And we talk a lot on this podcast about reframing the narrative. And I do think like that is such an important skill to be able to develop. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that in relation to writing your memoir, and whether there was kind of additional reframing that happened while you were writing, or had you kind of like done all the processing and then just like put it down onto paper?
Yeah. My process around writing memoir, the two memoirs I've written have been, it's just all so much messy. It's so messy. Like, as I'm writing, I'm having experiences with friends.
Right.
It's revising my life. Therefore, the book had to be revised. And this idea of revision, you know, which I like to really take that word apart. It means seeing myself in a new way, revision. And reframe is another really great, just kind of empowering words. And so I had this story about I'm not a good friend. I can't be close to women because I'm super competitive, and I can trace that back to my sister. And I just like that would just roll off my tongue, and I just let that be okay for years and years and years.
And well, and you were comfortable in that narrative.
Yeah, that's the thing. The part about reframing and revision is, even if I have a story that is harmful to me or self-abusive or limiting in very obvious ways, letting go is still painful.
Yes.
And I don't quite understand that part of my human nature, but there's a mourning. It had been comfortable to hide out in this story.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have to take risks. I didn't have to be vulnerable. It was kind of like you throw up your hand. I would throw up my hands and say, I just kind of suck at this. So this, of course, the relationship went combust instead of doing the hard work of saying, this is hard. I'm scared. Yeah. Here's what I'm playing with. Where are you? And it just, so yes, I had to like revise parts as I was living in my friendships. It was really scary. It didn't feel as tidy. Mm. My first book group, it was all farther in the past. And so the iterative process between life and the book were, it was like, that was a long time ago. I'm not that person anymore, but BFF comes straight up into the shores of my daily life. So there was much more, it was much more unwieldy and scary.
Can I ask just kind of a follow-up question about our families and how it impacts how we make and maintain friendships? Because I had never really, I think you talk about this so clearly, and I had never made this connection that not only like my family trauma is going to impact how I am in friendship relationships, but also how I view myself within the context of my family. I would just love to hear kind of how you initially made that connection. And if you feel like healing family trauma influences our ability to be better friends.
Oh my God. Totally. I was about to say, I could write a book about that. I did.
You did. Oh, wait, don't worry. You don't have to do it.
Okay. All done. Yeah, that went to press. I just love this topic so much because I feel like I was saying words all these years and I was, fairly sophisticated psychologically, but it doesn't matter because I had my blind spots and you can't, no matter how brilliant you are, I'm not even saying I was brilliant, but like the blind spots are the blind spots. And what I carried with me from my family of origin was I literally thought that I was the reason my father had a drinking problem. Mm. It was because I cried all the time. I had put this all together. I locked down that story. And what I had to really when I peeled that back, first of all, it wasn't true. I found out when I was like 27 or 28, my dad started drinking when he was 16, long before, like 15 years before I was ever even born. So I was like, oh, and I remember feeling relief upon hearing that. Cause then like little baby Christie's kind of absolved, but also, and more importantly, I didn't feel like I had a big role in the story anymore. If I was the cause of his alcoholism, which is ridiculous, people don't cause alcoholism. But when I was the cause of his alcoholism, I felt like I was important. I was significant. I was really bonded to him in this way, not a great way, but at least I had a starring role. And when I became right-sized by learning that, the disease of alcoholism is much more complex and little babies don't cause it. Then I was just like, well, I was just like a little baby with colic. What's great about that? Like, who cares about that kid? So I had to really, like, there was a lot of ego and trauma, of course, trauma in there. Like the fact that I ever for one second thought alcoholism was my fault is pretty telling of what kind of things I put on my own shoulders. Right. So when I I'm walking around in the world trying to form relationships with girls and later women who weren't, in my mind, they weren't a reason to drink. They weren't causes of alcoholism, but I was. And I just carried this huge shame. Like, I'm toxic. If you get too close to me, a bad thing will happen to you. And that was just that's just the blow up of a lie that I carried since I was a baby. So I don't know how other people may be able to. I could not untangle my present day relationships with friends until I could look back at what I had brought forward from my family.
Oof. I also just wanted to, I guess, highlight a really poignant scene in your book at your younger sister Virginia's christening.
Yeah.
Where your dad says, like, this is the baby we had after I got sober. Like, she's our miracle baby. I mean, like, so I'm sure, like, as you write, like, that just kind of compounds all these feelings of, like, well, she's, she's the pure one. She's the good one. And so, one thing that I really liked that you did in this book is, you write about these conversations you had with Meredith where you're kind of unpacking all of your family trauma. And you say, like, several times, like, oh, I can't believe I haven't gotten over this. Like, why am I still kind of like hung up on like this? This is so insignificant. And she's like, no, like this is the trauma that you're working through. And I think for a lot of us, like when we think about that family trauma, like, yeah, it does kind of sound insignificant. And then it's like, well, no, it's not actually. So I really appreciated how you did that. And I guess on the flip side, my other question is like, do you think that your parents could have done anything differently when you were growing up that might have kind of not allowed these narratives to grow in your brain? Not to say that it's your parents' fault, but I'm just curious. Also, like, as a mom, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, I
like,
know, raising kids,
like, yeah, like raising kids, like, I'm sure your parents didn't mean to create this narrative, but they did.
Yes.
I don't know. Am I making any sense? Like,
yeah, you are. And I certainly think about this all the time. And what I'm super aware of when I too am a mother and I'm very sensitive about this. And my daughter is older and she's super sensitive about, it's harder to be an older sister. My husband and I are both second borns. And so she thinks we'll always side with her little brother. And
oh my gosh.
She's very, yep. very, it's sort of like I got exactly the right child. And I don't know, of course, I don't want to replicate anything that
right.
harmed me, right or wrong. What my best guess at this is to let my daughter have her say without being defensive. Now, I'm totally, totally defensive, but I ask her, how does this feel? What do you think? What's your perception? And I try to have as many conversations about how my children, both of them, perceive favoritism and sibling rivalry and who do we side with. I mean, they're really, really paying attention. And the examples that come out of their mouth are nothing that I'm thinking of. It's something that feels like, wait, I have such a good reason for why my son got this and my daughter got that. And it's like, from the parent vantage point, it's completely the right thing for the right child. But to them, it just looks like one of them got a birthday party and the other one didn't. And to let them have those conversations, like, and to let them share how it feels to be them without trying to change their reality. I'm not saying I do this. I'm saying I'm striving for that. And other than that, I do think that in some ways, like in my family growing up, there was sort of a mismatch. I was an emotional, needy child and I wanted to be held really, really close, like maybe closer than most. I don't know. And my parents were not as available. Like that didn't, I don't think that appeal, being held close does not appeal to them. The kind of intimacy I've been in training for with all my therapy and recovery, in which I think my heart has always longed for, there's just a bit of mismatch there. And I don't think I really have a very, I don't know, compassionate view for all the people. Like when I take a bird's eye view of us, like looking down at Dallas in 1978 or whatever, it's like, these were people with very different needs and they were muddling through and there was lots of pressure from the outside. And, so I don't have bad feelings about any choices anybody made. I'm just happy I figured out what I needed and found places to get it. Cause to get it, you know, I started in recovery at age 19. That's really young. I feel really, really lucky that I found places to begin to get my needs met as a teenager. That's that I feel more lucky than anything.
Can you kind of for those of us or those folks listening who are curious about what Al-Anon is or even what it means and who it's for and what is it for, can you kind of just offer the very like bare bones entry level log line of Al-Anon and then maybe also just share the role that it's played in your own life, which is a huge part of this book.
Sure. I have to say this is my favorite question I've ever gotten asked ever. So thank Yay. You. So everyone's familiar with AA. It's all over popular culture. There's whole storylines about that. And, you know, it's for someone with out of control drinking. who wants to get sober and can't on their own. They one choice is to go to AA and you get coins and you have sponsors and it's really well known. And I, for years, I've had this like bee in my bonnet, like nobody knows about Al-Anon. Al-Anon is the counterpart to AA because alcoholism is a system that has people in them. And usually there's at least one drinker, but then everybody else is propping up the drinker. And the people who grow up with alcoholic parents or marry alcoholics or have children who are alcoholics, those people get to go to AA and see themselves all over culture. And where are the families who are struggling and watching someone slide down? Where are they supposed to go? And Al-Anon is a program for people who love someone who's addicted to a substance. Usually it's alcohol. I know lots of people who go for drug addiction, etc. But that's the place to go. Like if you've been wrung inside out and you have developed in the system of alcoholism a way, ways of behaving that don't work for you, that's a place to go to deal with your own addiction. Cause it turns out that many people, I mean, maybe they may not use the word addiction, but they're pretty locked in to an alcoholic cycle that's inevitable when you have alcoholism around you. And for every alcoholic, there are 4 to 5 people who suffer because of that person's alcoholism, and they're not the drinker. That's the alcoholic. So by those standards, like Al-Anon should be giant, way bigger than AA. So I sort of feel like there's a lot of people suffering. And, you know, my dad got sober when I was 3. So I don't have a ton of memories and I still needed lots of help. I grew up in an alcoholic system and my adult relationships, as I started dating one addict after another, it was very clear that I had been marked in a way that I couldn't get out of these patterns by myself. And that's why I go to Al-Anon still to this day.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
All right, we are back.
Christy, you brought up your kids, and I wanted to ask you about an article you wrote a few years ago where your daughter asked you to stop writing about her online, and you wrote that you weren't going to agree to that, that you were going to kind of like chart this middle path. And as I recall, I think the article like kind of went viral, and like the comments were very intense. And I'm just wondering, like, where do you kind of stand on that now? And what is your relationship with your daughter like in terms of what you write about? And, you know, just kind of like how are you feeling about what you wrote 3 years ago versus how you feel now? Like, do you still stand by everything that you wrote in that piece?
Well, I would say of that piece, I really shit the bed. And the whole wide world let me know. I was getting hate mail from Libya. I got something from Greenland. It was terrible. And you know what? I did not understand the debate that I had waded into. I really did not understand. First of all, the headline was very incendiary. I did not write the headline, but I should have known that it would have probably come out with a headline. Like, my daughter asked me not to write about her. Here's why I can't do that. That's galling on its face to many, many people. Totally. And I totally understand why. So that was one part of it. The other part is I was making a point, a very in my mind, a very narrow point about this middle ground.
Yeah.
But the debate had already been raging all around me, and I did not realize I had not done sufficient research about privacy, about my kids were just on the cusp of being, quote, too old to write about. And mm-hmm. I had come of age writing before the internet was like a totally toxic stew. And I made great friends and we were writing about what do we do about separation anxiety, or my son stuck a pistachio up his nose. How do I get it out? And then there's a blog post about it. It was just a gentler time. And by the time I wrote that article that went viral, I had not caught up with the requisite the sides of the debate, right? Children deserve privacy. They deserve to grow up without their mothers putting their diaries on the internet. I fully agree with that. But I do still have a question about how can someone who mothers write about her life without just shutting it all down? Because a lot of my experience is a lot of the strain of the debate that I was reacting to was like, you have to stop, full stop, period. Mm-hmm. And I still think there must be some way to do it. Now, I'm not going to write about my daughter's menstruation or like any of those things. And she has since has found my writing. She knows about this debate and she is a very private person. And so I don't talk about our relationship anymore, but I do talk about my motherhood and that I believe that there's a way to talk about my motherhood and leave her out of it, which sounds crazy. But when it went on a case by case basis, I find that it is possible. My body, my motherhood, my experience of mothering, and just leave her out of it. And my son too. Like he doesn't need to be center stage. And really, when I wrote that piece, I was also saying, I really want to hear from the other mothers. Like, please don't go away and shut up. Now that your kids hit middle school, please stay, please stay. It was like a fear of abandonment because I was watching people drop off one by one. And I knew writers who were still able to, there were neutral topics. There were places where they could talk about their experience of mothering. And I wanted us all to like sort of stay in the space of writing about ourselves, even if it was hard to make those calls sometimes. So that was a very scarring experience. I'd always wanted to go viral. And then it was so overwhelming. And I do understand where people were coming from. And I'm glad I had the wake up call because it helped me get really clear very quickly what kind of boundaries my family needed and just how to take care of all the different people, my children, my family, and also myself. And then the rest of the world can think whatever they want about it. But there's a real, real hysteria around children, which I'm just curious about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is something that Kate and I think about as well. I mean, Kate's kids are one of them is in middle school and then one of them is soon to be in middle school. And you don't really write about your kids or talk about them on the podcast. You're right in the sense of like a lot of these conversations are happening privately, like in private Facebook groups and private message boards and private conversations, which is great for the people who are in them. But like, what about the people who aren't, you know, where are they getting the support that they might need? And I don't really know what the answer is. Besides like when your kid tells you they don't want to be written about, then I think you do have to honor that. And you somehow, like you said, you have to figure out how to thread that needle of like writing about motherhood without writing about your specific kid.
Right.
Which is tough.
And I think one of the things that helped me too is I'm less nervous. And I think in general, people are less nervous around books. So I was able to, there's something about the internet and the culture there that's so snarky or easy to misread and just too quick. And so I was able to sort of scratch that itch and to feel the fellowship of motherhood that I was so craving. I was able to find that in books and less on the internet.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I wanted to ask on the other spectrum of relationships, friendships with
folks who are not in your generation, which is at the core of BFF is your friendship with Meredith, who is older. And I like kind of have this fantasy about having an older female friend, but I also am finding I am really struggling to like connect to people I meet who are Generation Z. I like feel like we are just, I'm just like, I don't understand. I don't get your slang. I feel very dated and like just kind of awkward around you. Like, so just, I think these relationships are so important, but I also don't really know how to make them, or sustain them. Like, I don't even know how to like find a common ground. So I would love your advice there on kind of how you feel about nurturing intergenerational friendships, but also even just establishing them.
I totally hear you on that. Like when I think back to when I would first start to see Meredith, and I never thought of her as a friend, and it was because she was too old. She was too old to be. I just thought of, it was like I was in a grade school mentality. Like I'm in fourth grade, she's a senior in high school. We can't be friends. And of course that doesn't translate in adulthood. And she was persistent. And I think about how, I mean, one great thing about being in 12-step recovery is that it brings you in contact. It has brought me in contact with all sorts of ages and all different socioeconomic. I mean, there's such a thing in some 12-step groups. They have like young people's meetings. And I used to go to those when I was young. And then I was like, now I think I've aged out of them. Plus I'm like, why are we segregating by age? The greatest gift this gives me is hearing what it's like to be, you know, dealing with someone else's addiction at 68. I'm 50, hearing a 20-year-old, whatever. So, and I think about when Meredith and I got close and there was like a group of us at the same meeting and we were all young. We were in our mid-30s having babies and she was already, you know, in her 50s and past that point in her life. And the vulnerability that she felt being at the very base level, she was different than we were. She was doing different things. She was shopping for different things and her life looked really different. And I think about how she modeled for me. She felt really vulnerable and we're all out there. I can remember we're out there on the sidewalk talking about like Adele or whatever. And she's like listening to Cher in her car. Like there's a total mismatch. And that mismatch can either be used for distance or it can be, again, like an invitation. Like I want to know what's it like to drive around listening to Cher because that's not what I do. So I think that there's a vulnerability and I have a similar experience, like the generations below me or whatever. I don't know what they're talking about. Their values feel really different to me. Like I don't understand, like, you don't want, what do you mean you don't want your mother's china? I don't understand. Like I'm a stuffed person. I'm very Gen Z. No, I'm Gen X. I'm very Gen X. And some of the ways that they approach work or ambition, I'm just like, and so I have moments when I'm just like, we're different. I'm going to go hang out with those people my own age. But then I have moments of like that grace, which maybe was what Meredith felt, where it's like, this is a chance to like make my world bigger by understanding and just accepting some of it. I'm never going to understand. I'm never going to understand. You don't want to drive. I couldn't wait to drive. I love to drive. I don't understand wanting to Uber everywhere. I'm scared of Ubers. I'm afraid I'm going to get murdered. So that's, we may never see eye to eye on that, but my life could be enriched and greater textured if I could make those connections. But you know, I don't know how to do it outside of the context of like, I have home meetings and I see the young people there and I hang out with them when I can. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. Otherwise, I suppose at my old job, before I quit working, there were lots of young folk around and they had so much more energy and they could go out so much more than I could, but I like to hear their stories. You know, at the end of the day, tell me a good story. I don't care how old you are.
Yeah. And honestly, like how else are we going to better understand each other without connecting intergenerationally? But I find it like I'm finding the older I get, I can really like feel that barrier come up that I never realized was there when I was younger. And that has been really just interesting to experience. And it makes me a little sad, honestly. So I'm trying to navigate it. I think I appreciate that so much, the way you your perspective on it. Can we talk about advice that you might have for folks who are in a friendship with someone who is ill or dying? You know, this is, I have been in this position once, and it's wild. It's not something we're ever really trained on. And I think it's even, it's different than when it's, you know, a family member or there's just a different experience when it's a chosen person. And I'm wondering, having been through it yourself, do you have advice that you share with people?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I learned in my experience with Meredith is to listen, to ask what is wanted and needed, and then to listen. Mm. I think for early on when Meredith was sick, I was asking the right questions because I'm socialized and I know to ask her what she wants and what do you need, but I wasn't listening to what she said because I wanted a certain answer. I wanted to be the star of her illness show, kind of like I wanted to be the reason my dad drank. And I had to really check my ego and, you know, let her have what she needed and wanted. That part was really hard because that meant I had to honor that and be quiet and then be still with my own feelings. And I did not want to do that because it was scary and sad, and it'd be more fun to like take her some sushi than to feel sad and scared and at a loss. That feeling of being at a loss is a terrible feeling. And maybe that's what our friends need from us, to hold that. That's probably a tiny fraction of what an ill person is feeling. And maybe part of being witness to that and being a friend is hold our share and not make her hold it for me.
Mm. Yeah. I love that. That's a really grueling experience to go through. And I do think that thing that you mentioned, that like wanting to be the star of someone's illness show, happens a lot. And is very challenging to navigate on all sides.
Yeah, I like that. I notice myself now, I just got a meal train, right, for another friend who's sick. She's going to be okay, but she's in an acute period. And there's the meal train. And I was like, who's already signed up? Like, who did it? I don't like this part of my character 100%, but everything's a competition until I can just sort of breathe and be like, okay, we're all taking care of the friends. And it's not a race to see who can bring the falafel first. But that gets generated in me when a friend is sick, a friend that's like, there becomes a scarcity and a peril and danger. And it doesn't bring out the best in me. I'll just say it. It just doesn't. So I have to move slowly and be sure I'm not foisting my character defects on someone who's sick. That's the last thing that they need.
Ooh. That's so real.
But it happens all the time. All the time.
Yeah. Well, Christy, it's been really great to get to talk to you. Can you let our listeners know where they can find you and follow along with your work and get your books, all that good stuff?
Sure. I predominantly hang out on Instagram, and it's just at ChristyTate.com. And also I have a website, it's ChristyTate.com as well. I try to put my current, write whatever essays have been published, my tour schedule, links to order the books. And otherwise, I don't do Twitter because I'm too scared. but I definitely, I love reader engagement, and it was really fun. I didn't know how engaged readers were until I published my first book. It's a blast. And I don't even need it to be all fan mail. I just, any honest engagement, like, I'm game for it. And I love to talk about books. So I'm pretty chatty. I'm also probably avoiding my work. So I'm always up for a conversation
Relatable.
About books and reading. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much. And Christy's new book is out on February 7th. So do pick it up.
That's great. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys are super fun. I love this.
I need to find myself a 65, 70 year old friend. Just saying, if anyone wants to be my friend,
and you're we have listeners in their 70s. We've heard from them.
I know. And there's one special one who sends me very sweet, like, DM memes sometimes.
Oh,
yeah, I know. Can you move to LA and we'll get coffee? I wish there was like a matchmaking app where it was like young people in their 30s and 40s having midlife crises about friendship. You seeking like wisdom filled septuagenarian. I can't say that word, but you know the word I'm trying to say.
Totally. There was, you know, there is an app called Peanut that was meant to introduce like mom friends. But maybe there needs to be like a grandma. Cross-generational. Yeah, there needs to be like a cross-generational app.
Well, 43-year-old woman seeking friend, ages 60 and up.
Oh my gosh.
No, I really enjoyed our conversation with Christy. Especially, I was really glad we got to touch on Al-Anon. I feel like that has not come up yet on the podcast.
Yeah.
And is such a vital self-care tool for so many people.
Totally.
Well, Dory, how is it going keeping the one corner of your kitchen counter clean?
It's been going pretty well. It's stayed reasonably clean. There's a couple of stray papers that have shown up, and I've been like, "What are these?" And but it's definitely an improvement. Nice. And yeah, so you know, I'm gonna try to tackle different doom pile areas throughout the house in the coming days and weeks.
What is your intention this week?
Okay, despite my kind of criticism of the full focus planner at the top of the show, I do want to go into this with a somewhat open mind, as open as my mind can be.
Okay.
As a judgmental person. and give this planner a shot.
Okay.
So that is my intention for this week. I'm going to really commit to this planner and see what happens. It's just a week. Kate, what about you? Did you do a very short loving kindness meditation?
No. I didn't. Okay, I mean, but you know, maybe my vision boarding was kind of part of that in a way, because I do feel like,
okay,
I do feel like it is a way of like, I don't know, being kind to myself, but no, I didn't. I still would like to, but I just have not, I'll be honest, like I have not gotten around to it. But one thing I have been doing, which is my intention for this week, is I've been reading a lot, and I have a lot of books that I'm trying to blurb. Which, if that is an unfamiliar term to you, it means as an author, we are often asked to read other authors' books before they come out and write a very quick, like, quip or review that can go on a cover. Like, words of praise. And I really love doing it, and it means a lot to get asked to do it. So I've been reading a bunch of books that I'm blurbing. And one thing I've been doing is after dinner, like, after everybody kind of, like, cleans up and homework's done, we've been making hot chocolate and tea, me and my two daughters, and reading together, like having like an hour of reading time, which has been really fun because like sometimes we'll talk about our books or it's just kind of cozy, but everybody's doing their own thing and it's been really nice. So I'm going to try to keep doing that at least, you know, a couple times this week. It's also hilarious because like last night, you know, like my kids are reading, you know, like books about this like dragon fantasy book, and I'm reading about like two actors having like hot sex in a hotel. But they don't know what I'm reading, so it's fine.
That's really funny. Well, Kate, this has been fun. Let's just remind everyone that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dory Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sammy Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. We'll talk to you all again soon.
Bye.
Bye.